You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A couple of years ago, in an article in Psychology Today, cognitive scientist Art Markman looked into what motivates people to donate to relief organizations after a disaster. The research suggests that when news of floods, typhoons, hurricanes, and earthquakes is reported, along with the death toll and injuries associated with them, it inspires people to give. In fact, the higher the death toll, the more they give. Nowhere was that more evident than in the response to the 7.0 magnitude earthquake that struck Haiti on January 12, 2010. Between 230,000 and 316,000 people were killed, 300,000 were injured, and 1.5 million people were displaced. The outpouring of relief brought at least $500 million to the Red Cross alone. But where did all that money go, and why have relief efforts stalled? In a series of articles for ProPublica, Justin Elliott follows the money and explains why the Red Cross may not even know where it all went. I'm pleased that it brings Justin Elliott to our show today. Hello.
Good to be here.
Didn't you work with Laura Sullivan of NPR in this investigation?
Yeah, that's right. Laura Sullivan and I, along with another ProPublica colleague, Jesse Eisinger, actually started writing about the Red Cross last year, looking into their response to Hurricane Sandy here in New York, and there were a lot of problems with that. After we published that story, we started to hear from a lot of people who'd worked on the Red Cross Haiti program saying that we should take a look at Haiti because it was very troubled.
So you started talking to the Red Cross, and at a certain point you received an email from a Red Cross spokesperson, Susie DeFrancis, that they would no longer respond to questions from ProPublica and NPR. Had they been cooperative until then?
Yeah, I mean, we had actually gone back and forth with them for months before our sort of main story about their Haiti response was published in June. And we had extensive correspondence with them, presenting our findings to them. And they did respond more recently, a couple weeks ago, when we published a follow-up story about new internal Red Cross documents sort of describing problems they had tracking money in Haiti and other things. That's when we got that email from their spokesperson saying they weren't going to respond.
Are their financial records public?
You know, if you go to their website and click on the sort of Haiti response page, the only thing you'll find is essentially a pie chart with maybe six slices in it that says, you know, we spent 20% of our money on water programs. We spent another 20% on shelter programs. And that's essentially as far as they'll go in terms of breaking down how they spent this money. And as you mentioned, they raised almost $500 million in Haiti. So really, we spent a lot of time trying to get beyond that pie chart and figure out where this money really went.
So they're not required by law to give you anything more than a pie chart?
They're not even required to give that, actually. I mean, the Red Cross, while they have a sort of special relationship with the U.S. government, it's actually a private nonprofit group. So they don't have to release anything beyond sort of general tax information.
One of the articles in your series is headed Confidential Documents. Red Cross itself may not know how millions donated for Haiti were spent. The American Red Cross has been in operation since 1881. Don't they have mechanisms for keeping track of the money that they spend?
You would think that they should. The basis for the piece you just mentioned were a couple of internal assessments that the Red Cross did of some of their Haiti projects. And what those assessments said was that they didn't have any quote-unquote correct process for monitoring project spending in Haiti. They also, I mean, to give a specific example, a lot of the money the Red Cross raised for Haiti, they actually then redistributed to other aid groups to sort of actually do the work in Haiti. And in the case of $10 million they gave to other groups to respond to the cholera epidemic, these internal assessments found that the Red Cross never tracked what happened to that money. They don't know if anything was accomplished. And in at least one case, there was actually misspending that happened unbeknownst to them.
And the documents you obtained also suggest that the accuracy of the Red Cross's claims about how many Haitians they've helped is being called into question. How many do they claim they helped?
So again, if you go to their website and then if you look at their sort of glossy reports about the Haiti program, there's this number that gets bandied about of 4.5 million people, 4.5 million Haitians that they helped get back on their feet after the earthquake. you know, Haiti itself only has 10 million people in it. So they're actually claiming that they helped nearly half the population of the entire country. You know, we've asked them repeatedly to sort of show us the math on that number. Where does it come from? They've declined to do that. And when Laura Sullivan of NPR and I went down to Haiti earlier this year and talking to government officials, you know, no one in Haiti believes that actually 4.5 million people were helped by the Red Cross. And there's several internal assessments from the Red Cross that cast doubt on their own numbers.
You found a report that concluded that the Red Cross figures on the number of people helped in a hygiene promotion project were fairly meaningless. Is that code for made-up numbers?
I don't know that it's sort of entirely made up, but I mean, on that one project, for example, this was a project where they were promoting good hygiene and hand washing and that sort of thing. And this assessment from an outside consultant who was retained by the Red Cross found that they were counting, you know, if a Red Cross staff person in Haiti sort of held a seminar showing good hand washing technique and sort of just people walked by it, every single person that maybe was at that seminar for a couple of minutes, even if they weren't paying attention, would be marked down as somebody helped. And so that's where, again, in the words of this, their own assessment, these numbers were fairly meaningless.
You mentioned the cholera program and the people that they worked with. An investigation found that none of the cholera program partners' work has been evaluated by American Red Cross, and that the ARC doesn't know for sure if the objectives were achieved.
That's right. So as people may remember, about 8 or 9 months after the earthquake hit in 2010, this cholera epidemic broke out in Haiti. It was actually brought there by UN soldiers. The international aid groups that were in Haiti, including the American Red Cross, really struggled to respond to that in a quick way. And I mean, thousands of people ultimately died. These documents and other documents describe how their main response to the cholera epidemic was delayed for many months. And as you say, they don't actually even appear to know, in the case of money that they gave to other groups, whether that money was properly spent. In some cases, it wasn't.
And 90,000 Haitians are estimated to have died from that cholera outbreak.
I think it's actually on the order of maybe several thousand, not quite that high. But yes, thousands of patients
have died. Maybe it was 9,000. I added a zero when I wrote it down. Didn't you find that one Red Cross sanitation project went so badly it created what Haitian camp residents called a Red Cross flood of waste?
That's right. So this was, again, in one of these internal assessments of a project where they were trying to build latrines in camps where Haitians were living who had been displaced by the earthquake. And they weren't doing a good job, and these latrines weren't working. And in this one camp in particular, when it rained, the residents apparently referred to a Red Cross flood of waste, which is a grim picture.
My guest is Justin Elliott, who's been a reporter with ProPublica since 2012 and has been writing about the Red Cross's response to the earthquake in Haiti on January 12, 2010. Your reporting led Senator Chuck Grassley, in his capacity as chair of the Committee on the Judiciary, to send a letter on July 8th to Gail J. McGovern, the president and CEO of the American Red Cross, and it included 17 questions. Maybe we'll go through some of them. In that letter, Senator Grassley notes that he met with her a few months prior to address reducing waste, fraud, and abuse within the organization. Was that all related to Haiti?
Actually, it was broader than Haiti. I mean, Senator Grassley actually has a history with the Red Cross. Even though it's a private nonprofit, it turns out the Red Cross, the American Red Cross, was actually chartered by Congress.
In 1881?
I believe the charter actually came in the early 1900s. The Red Cross existed before the charter, but it was sort of formally chartered by Congress several decades later. So Congress does have some oversight ability on the Red Cross. And About 10 years ago, after scandals after 9/11 that people may remember involving whether donations were being used properly and a sort of botched response to Hurricane Katrina, Senator Grassley got involved at that point and actually passed legislation that overhauled the whole governance of the Red Cross. So he's sort of been interested in the organization since then.
Gail McGovern claimed at the time that the Red Cross had taken steps to improve the situation.
Yeah, I mean, the Red Cross's response to our reporting both on Hurricane Sandy and the problems there and also in the Haiti response has generally been that that they've maintained that they've done a good job in these disasters. You know, they've allowed that they maybe had a few problems in Haiti, but there was a sort of a constant corrective process. From our reporting, which is really mainly based on interviews with people who worked for the Red Cross, shows that really there have been serious problems that the management has so far sort of failed to address.
The first of Senator Grassley's 17 questions is, what was the exact amount the Red Cross raised for relief efforts in Haiti and how much was spent? And you say they can't actually answer the second part of that question because they don't know where the money went.
Yeah, I mean, they've said that they have spent sort of the vast majority of that money on the order of $400 million. The question, the real question mark, and we still don't have an answer to this, is exactly where was it spent? Do they have a detailed breakdown of where the money went? And if they do have it, are those numbers actually accurate?
The second of the 17 questions is, for each year after the Haiti earthquake, please provide a list of organizations the Red Cross partnered with on projects or subcontracted with, provided grants to similar associations. Can they do that?
They may be able to. So they're actually still going back and forth with Senator Grassley. And we do know they have said that they sort of re-granted some of this money to roughly 50 other aid groups to do much of the actual work in Haiti. It's not clear that they have, again, accurate information about what those groups actually did with the money, you know, how much actually reached Haiti, how much went to overhead for the Red Cross and these other groups. And in fact, you know, at least in the case of the cholera programs, their own assessment found that they don't know whether that money was spent properly.
In question five, Senator Grassley wanted to know how many homes have been built. He noted the Red Cross had promised to provide permanent homes and improve infrastructure. And one example was the $24 million project to transform neighborhoods like Campeche. Where's Campeche? What happened there?
Yeah, it's a neighbor. It's Campeche. It's a neighbor.
I should know. It's French.
Yeah, it's a poor, it's sort of typical, very poor neighborhood in Port-au-Prince. And this was one of the projects that the American Red Cross was actually doing itself or trying to do itself. I went there earlier this year with Laura Sullivan, and we were actually expecting to find a sort of successful project because we had read about it on the Red Cross's website.
They said they were going to build 700 homes.
That's right. You know, very quickly after arriving there, we met the leaders of a local community group that had actually been set up by the Red Cross several years ago to sort of work with them. And they were very frustrated, very angry at the American Red Cross. You know, this project has a budget of $24 million, and these people were originally promised hundreds of new permanent homes. The project, according to people who worked on it, was delayed for years, you know, essentially nothing happening of significance on the ground for the first couple of years, even as money was being spent on staff and rent and all that sort of thing. Now the entire thing has been scaled back. They're building a road, doing some sort of reinforcements on houses, but they're not building the hundreds of promised new houses, and the people there are very upset. That's just one part of the sort of broader problems in their attempt to build housing in Haiti.
700 houses, but they've only built 6.
Right. So
they say that part of the problem was that they ran into problems acquiring land rights, but other organizations have been able to build something like 9,000 homes.
That's right. So the CEO of the American Red Cross, Gail McGovern, promised early on that their focus in Haiti was going to, after the sort of an immediate relief phase, was going to be building, providing permanent housing. They were even going to build brand new communities in Haiti. Now it's more than 5 years after the earthquake, and the number of permanent homes they've actually built is, as you mentioned, 6. we found that while it's very true that Haiti is a difficult place to operate, it's definitely true that there's a really problematic legal system in terms of acquiring clear title for land. It's a developing country. There's not good infrastructure. But the Red Cross attempted to do these projects, and largely because of problems coming out of headquarters in Washington, not related to the difficulties of Haiti. There were years-long delays. Many of these projects were canceled. They never built brand new communities that they said they were going to build. And you know, as you mentioned, other groups, many of them smaller, many of them who have deeper ties in Haiti and sort of knew how to operate in the country, did actually succeed in building thousands of new homes.
My guest is Justin Elliott, who is with ProPublica and with Laura Sullivan of NPR, investigated relief efforts by the Red Cross into Haitian relief in the aftermath of the January 12, 2010 earthquake. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Justin Elliott, reporter for ProPublica. He did a joint investigation with Laura Sullivan of NPR into what the Red Cross efforts were in Haiti in the aftermath of the January 12, 2010 earthquake. We've been going through some of Senator Grassley's questions. Question six, he asked the Red Cross to report on how much of the $500 million in relief aid was spent on overhead. Is that known?
It's not actually, and it's another big question mark. So what we do know is that if you gave money to the Red Cross for Haiti, and millions, literally millions of people did, many by texting and donations, what the Red Cross does is they take out 9% immediately and sort of un-earmark that, and that goes to just sort of general overhead to pay for things like fundraising and offices in Washington, and that sort of thing. That's according to the Red Cross anyways. But then we know that a significant amount of this money then went to other groups. So one big question mark, and we may get an answer to this, or the senator may get an answer to this soon, is how much did those other groups spend on overhead? And then there's a sort of third category, which is how much did the Red Cross spend on management expenses on these projects done by other groups? And we got a glimpse of that in one case, and it seemed like it might actually be as much as around 25% on top of the 9% that they already took out.
In other disasters, hasn't the Red Cross been accused of spending money raised for that disaster on other things, other disasters?
Yeah, this was the sort of big scandal after 9/11 when they actually, you know, for Haiti, they raised $500 million. After 9/11, they actually raised, I believe, $1 billion or on the order of $1 billion. And they sort of initially announced that they were going to actually not spend all that money on sort of 9/11 related activities and for victims, but they were going to just spend it just to go to the general organization. There was a huge outcry, and the CEO back then, Bernardine Healy, ended up getting forced out. So since then, this has been sort of a very sensitive issue. They maintain, and we don't have any evidence to the contrary, that if you clearly earmark your donation and say this is for Haiti, then that will go into a bank account that's earmarked for Haiti. If you don't do that, it'll go into some sort of general fund that can be spent on anything.
Some people you spoke with felt that the American Red Cross viewed the whole Haitian disaster as a fundraising opportunity.
That's right. And, the simple fact is, and the CEO, Gail McGovern, has said this, that the American Red Cross relies on sort of big, high-profile national disaster or national or international disasters like this earthquake or like Hurricane Sandy. The organization has been financially strapped in recent years for a number of reasons. And really the only years that they've been in the black are when there's a big disaster like Sandy or the earthquake in Haiti. And that's both because they're raising a lot of money for Haiti, but also when, you know, when Michelle Obama is on television saying give to the Red Cross for Haiti, and when celebrities are doing telethons saying the same thing, people also make donations that they might think are going to Haiti, but are actually they haven't earmarked and are actually just going to the Red Cross sort of general coffers.
After Hurricane Sandy, there were complaints that many of the Red Cross's efforts involved photo ops, but that couldn't have been the case in Haiti.
Right. I mean, one of the big themes in the Sandy reporting we did was that national headquarters in Washington, and in particular the CEO, Gail McGovern, who actually used to be a professor of marketing at Harvard Business School, were obsessed with the brand and PR, actually to the detriment of providing relief. And in the Sandy case, just briefly, we actually published an internal PowerPoint slideshow about lessons learned after Hurricane Sandy. And there's a slide that says hindrances to service delivery. And then it says bullet point, national headquarters. And then it says national headquarters actually diverted disaster relief assets, like trucks that were supposed to be handing out food, were diverted for PR purposes. I mean, in one case, they actually called up truck drivers who were going out to places in Staten Island to deliver food and told them to turn around and report to a press conference to be a backdrop with the CEO. So that was a big theme in Sandy. We heard a little bit of that in Haiti, but not as much.
Well, some officials you spoke to suggested that the American Red Cross leadership was more interested in pursuing projects that generated good publicity and not actually building homes. But wouldn't building homes have generated good publicity?
Yeah, I mean, that was an allegation by a guy who worked, who was the head of the Red Cross's shelter efforts in Haiti, and he was sort of a longtime veteran international aid worker who left in disgust and described being in these meetings in Washington, including with the CEO, Gail McGovern, where he alleges they deny that they were just focused on, okay, what can we do that's going to look good? And it wasn't really a serious conversation about what they could do to actually be effective in Haiti. But of course, you're right. They ultimately, if they had, for example, built brand new communities, that would at least be something they could put in their PR materials. But that didn't ultimately happen.
And you also heard complaints that everything had to go through Washington, D.C.
That's right. I mean, one of the big problems that we just heard about repeatedly in reporting on the Haiti program was that the American Red Cross historically doesn't really have much experience doing sort of reconstruction projects in developing countries. Their specialty is doing immediate disaster relief, providing food, maybe shelter after a disaster. But there are not many examples in which they've gone into a foreign country, especially a difficult place like Haiti, and done reconstruction work. So we heard repeatedly from people who worked on the program that, you know, they would send a request for, you know, approval to Washington, and it would just sit there for months and months and months. And during all that time, you know, money was being spent on staff, and while nothing was happening on the ground. And a lot of that flowed from the fact that they really just didn't have experience doing this kind of work, not to mention that before the earthquake, they had almost no presence in Haiti itself.
My guest is Justin Elliott of ProPublica. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You note that as early as 2011, Judith St. Fort, who was then the director of the Haiti program, said that there were serious program delays caused by internal issues due to lack of staff training. The Red Cross has had a lot of experience with disasters. What kind of staff training was missing here?
Yeah, I mean, that was what you were just reading from was a memo, an internal memo that we published with the story by this woman who was actually the head of the Haiti program at the time, complaining to her superiors in Washington that they had failed to do basic things like fill key positions for the delegation in Haiti. And in terms of training, they had hired people who didn't have experience, again, doing this sort of reconstruction work in a developing country. And that was another reason that a lot of these projects were floundering.
And there you point out there was a lot of talk about morale problems to some degree because of pay discrepancies.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, and this, I think, is not specific to the American Red Cross, but you have a situation where these expats, you know, some of whom are American, some of whom are from other countries, get sent to Haiti. They're getting paid, you know, pretty good salaries, over $100,000 in some cases. They're getting extra, you know, per diem for food. They're living in the nicest housing in Port-au-Prince. If you go there, for people who've been there, you'll see this. I mean, there's aid workers everywhere, and they you know, tend to live in the nice neighborhoods. At the same time, and we have documents that show this, the highest paid Haitian workers make only a fraction of what the expat workers make. So that, you know, inevitably leads to morale problems. And when we were speaking to people, the sort of intended beneficiaries of this work, for example, in the neighborhood of Campeche, there's a lot of resentment because they feel that people open their wallets and gave this money to help people who need it in Haiti, and they see these expat aid workers sort of living a good life while nothing is happening on the ground.
Was there a feeling within the Red Cross organization that there were no Haitians talented enough to perform the jobs that foreigners could do?
Yeah, I mean, what the Red Cross told us, and we quote this statement in the story, was that there was a lot of competition in Haiti after the earthquake for Haitian professionals who had the skills that were needed to do this sort of work. And there does seem to be truth to that. At the same time, the memo by the head of the program, Judith St. Fort, one of the things she describes, and she's a Haitian-American woman, is actually discriminatory remarks that were made by Red Cross officials claiming that Haitians weren't hardworking, saying that they shouldn't look at Haitian resumes because there aren't any quote-unquote good ones. You know, and I mean, just to mention, we did put all of that to the Red Cross, and they claim that they investigated that and didn't find any evidence of job discrimination.
Is this program still going on?
It is.
We're
actually
talking about over five years later.
It is still going on. They say that it's sort of winding up. It's supposed to – most of it's supposed to end next year. They still have a little bit over $50 million left. That's what they told Senator Grassley. It's not clear how much of that is already sort of earmarked for specific projects, but it's winding down essentially.
You spoke to a lot of whistleblowers. Did whistleblowers go to the Red Cross Ombudsman?
You know, it's not totally clear what the role of the Red Cross Ombudsman is. This is actually an office that was created after Katrina by Congress, by Senator Grassley, essentially, in the last round of Red Cross scandals. But our understanding, and we actually interviewed the Ombudsman last year, is that the Ombudsman's role is mainly to do sort of conflict resolution within the organization, not to primarily push through or advocate for reforms. I know from, you know, at this point I've talked to dozens and dozens of people who've worked at the Red Cross, and from what I've heard, that office is not taken particularly seriously. I know that Senator Grassley's office is looking into that the Ombudsman's role and whether it's used and whether they're really doing anything that's meaningful.
Do you worry that this type of story will make people reluctant to give when a disaster of this sort occurs?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something we've thought about. And we actually, on ProPublica, we published a short item talking about sort of what experts have told us about what you should do as a donor. You know, a couple of those things are, especially if this is an international disaster you're considering giving to, it's a good idea to do 5 minutes of research and try to find the groups that are actually already in that country and have a history there. I mean, we just heard repeatedly in Haiti that the groups that were able to operate in what is a difficult environment were groups that either were Haitian themselves or had a lot of Haitians working for them, had roots there. The American Red Cross had none of those things. So if you're thinking about giving, whether to the Red Cross or anyone else, try to see whether they're already there and sort of what the record is.
Doctors Without Borders makes it a policy to hire locals.
Yeah, I mean, we heard, Jen, I mean, I haven't done a sort of close look at Doctors Without Borders, but I can say that they have a very good reputation in Haiti. And, you know, another thing they did after the initial phase was they were bringing in all this money, and they actually told people to stop giving. They said, you know, we think we've raised enough. I think when they hit something around the $50 million mark, they said, we think we've raised enough for Haiti. If you want to give to our general fund, that's fine, but we're not going to keep sort of pumping for Haiti donations. The Red Cross didn't do that, ultimately raised far more than any other group. And we're left with all this money to do this reconstruction work that they didn't have too much experience doing.
You've been to Haiti. It's been 5.5 years since the earthquake. Is this, the country still suffering from the results of the earthquake?
It is still suffering. I mean, there's most of the rubble, or almost all of the rubble, has been cleared. I wasn't there directly after the earthquake, but if you look at pictures and talk to people there, they'll say that, you know, the streets were just filled with rubble. Most of that has been cleared. Most people who were living in these camps have now left the camps. But the country the effects are still being felt. You know, the economy is not doing particularly well. They're having a presidential election right now. But the effects are still being felt. There's a huge event.
Of course, Haiti had a troubled economy and troubled political situation even before the earthquake. It just exacerbated
Certainly.
Things.
Very true.
Thank you so much for being on our show, Justin Elliott, who, with Laura Sullivan of NPR, did a series of reports for ProPublica about the Red Cross's response to the January 12, 2010 earthquake in Haiti. It's been eye-opening.
Thank you very much.